Chapter 11. "Guess who?" the wallpaper man said, holding up a basket of paint-splattered tools. He had curly shoulder-length hair and bib overalls with no shirt underneath. One of his eyelids drooped. His smile was gap-toothed, howdy-doody on drugs. He kept walking in and out the door, up and down the stairs, whistling Lady Madonna. Grandma was probably somewhere in a roadside coffee shop, nibbling a corn muffin and receiving bad vibrations. "Yoo-hoo!" he called up the stairs. "You guys got a radio or something I could listen to? I work better with tunes." "In the parlor," I said, calling down the directions to Grandma's old cabinet model radio. "Whoa! A golden oldie," I heard him say. "Dig it." "Plug it in first. It has to warm up." Static crackled. Stations whizzed by at top volume. He settled on a screamy song I didn't recognize. One I didn't think Grandma's radio was even capable of playing. "Yoo-hoo again," he called up over the music. "I'm going to be putting up staging, so I don't want to trap you in up there."
"There's a butcher knife waiting for your heart if you try," I almost shouted back. The cuffs of his overalls were frayed. The seat was embroidered with mushrooms. I watched from the doorway as he bathed the old flamingo wallpaper with a sponge, staining it with big swooping strokes, and making little rips in it with a can opener. The hallway smelled of vinegar. I was supposed to pay him for this vandalism?
"You know how flamingos get pink?" he said as I tiptoed past. He peeled off a long shred of paper, like sunburned skin. "Shrimp. They eat shrimp. It turns them pink."
He smiled broadly at me. That droopy eyelid threw his whole face out of balance. If it was a joke about the shrimp, I didn't get it. I went out to the kitchen and chain-smoked, filling the drain trap with butts the way Grandma hated, waiting for the nicotine to rev up my blood. I'd lived in this house for 5 years and never whistled like that. "Poochie F," the phone book said. 102B Marion Court. He'd offered to talk any time. Leaving the house open to this hippie would horrify Grandma, I thought, with some satisfaction. He sang along with every single song that came on. I had to wait for a commercial just to get a word in. "Excuse me, do you happen to know where Marion Court is?"
"Marion Court, Marion Court. Oh, yeah, those brick apartments off Penny Avenue. Past Burger Chef and Schiavone Chevrolet."
"How far is it?"
5 miles, 6.
"Oh," I said, "I have an appointment there."
I was not about to take a bus, walk down a narrow aisle while people looked up from their laps for the free show. In the Yellow Pages, I found the number for the taxi station and stared at it until my eyesight blurred. I imagined getting in the back and not noticing until we'd sped up that the driver was Arthur Music, come back from North Carolina to beg my forgiveness or kill me. I saw myself throwing open the door at 60 miles an hour, leaning toward the rushing pavement as he pleaded into the rearview mirror.
"Excuse me," he said.
I took in a sharp breath. My hands flew into the air.
"Oops. Sorry.
Hey, look. I gotta go pick up some more sizing on Fountain Street. You need a lift over to Marion Court? What time's your appointment?"
"Well, it's flexible," I said. "They're expecting me whenever."
Someone had spray-painted K. Pasa on the passenger side door of his truck. The question mark dot was a peace sign. I stepped up and in, lowering myself amongst the seat debris. Cardboard coffee cups rolled around at my feet. I wondered if he'd ever driven up to Ma's toll booth, if coins had ever passed between them. My weight slanted his whole truck. The ride through Easterly felt lopsided. Luckily, he played the radio at a volume that ruled out conversation The truck rattled and creaked and reeked of gasoline.
"Here's Burger Chef," I said. "I'll walk from here."
"That's okay. I'll take you the rest of the way."
"No, thanks. I'd like to get some fresh air."
"Suit yourself," he shrugged. "That one's Penny Avenue across the street there. Follow it all the way down. Marion's the first or second left." It was the fourth left, a good mile down the road, that jerk. Grandma and I would be lucky if that hippy-dippy didn't hang the wallpaper upside down. My feet burned and I was winded. Mr. Pucci would probably answer the door, and there I'd be, having a heart attack. He had started this whole college thing. If I died, it was his fault. There was a flower box in his window, marigolds. "I'm the only kid at school who's seen these," I thought. His doorbell looked like a miniature breast. I pushed the nipple and waited. A man as slight as Mr. Pucci answered the door. He was wearing cutoffs and a blue and white striped tank top and holding a spatula. He took in my size.
"Yes?" his little mouth said. "Is Mr. Pucci home?"
Now he was looking at my sweat. He had Julius Caesar bangs.
No, he's not."
"When will he be back?" He patted at his hair, the spatula waving over his head.
God, I'm not sure. He went shopping. "I went to some trouble to get here. Do you mind if I wait for him out on the steps? And can I have a glass of water?"
"Well, sure. Come on in." The apartment had a kitchenette with swinging saloon doors. I stepped down into a sunken living room filled with plants. On the wall was a framed poster of Rudolf Nureyev frozen in midair, his body curved like a parenthesis. I sat back on the white sofa. That's when I saw the jukebox. It glowed purple and pink across the room. Above it was a glittering poster close-up of Dorothy's powder-blue ankle socks and red ruby slippers. "I like Mr. Pucci's jukebox," I said. He was lifting cookies off a cookie sheet.
"Play something," he said. "Can I get you a glass of wine, a fresca or something? You're Ingrid, right?"
"No," I said, more huffily than I'd meant to.
"Oh, I thought you were a friend of his from school."
"I am." It dawned on me who he'd mistaken me for. Miss Culp, a middle-aged history teacher at Easterly who was fat like me. Bertha Butt, the kids called her. She sometimes ate lunch with Mr. Pucci in the teacher's cafeteria. Her students were always making her cry. "Mr. Pucci was my guidance counselor. My name is Dolores." He looked up and lightened.
"Oh, right, right," he said.
Then he came down into the living room with iced tea and four cookies on a plate. He placed them on the coffee table next to me.
"Buddy's mentioned you," he said. "I'm Gary. I'm really sorry about your mother."
"It's okay," I shrugged. "Is Buddy Mr. Pucci?" He'd never invited me to call him that. I felt our intimacy evaporating. Gary went back up to the kitchen, leaving a trail of cologne. He had the beginning of a bald spot at the crown of his head.
"Are you a relative of his?" I asked.
He laughed nervously.
"Oh, we're roommates," he said.
"Oh, I like your jukebox. Did I already say that?"
"Go ahead and play something. You don't need money. It's jammed. I've got to finish these while they're warm, or else they'll stick. We're going to a cookout at 4 o'clock this aft."
"You and Buddy?" I pressed D1, and the record player glided down its row of options. A dough-faced woman with three chins watched me from inside the glass. She didn't smile. She blinked when I blinked.
Don't know why, but I'm feeling so sad. I long to try something I've never had.
As the tinny, girlish voice sang through the speaker cloth, I pressed my knees against the song, hearing and feeling it both. That voice was far away and beautiful, as sad as Ma. I looked up at Mr. Pucci's friend, my face asking the question. Billie Holiday, he said. She gets the pain right, doesn't she? Isn't she something? That's when I realized. They were homos together. All those snickering remarks about Mr. Pucci from kids at school. I imagined the two of them kissing, then made myself stop imagining it. You're a perverted pig, I told the fat woman in the jukebox glass. Mr. Pucci walked in carrying two grocery bags. He stiffened when he saw me. One of the bags slipped, but he caught it.
Dolores, he said. Hi, how are you?
Good, I said.
Good, he repeated. He looked over at Gary. Good. Great.
He drove me home in Gary's car, sidestepping the fact that I wouldn't fit into his Volkswagen. Unlike the hippie van, the inside of Gary's car was uncluttered, sterile. A plastic litter bag hung from the cigarette lighter knob, flat and empty.
I'm so happy for you about college, Mr. Pucci said.
His voice had relaxed to normal. It was my being in his house that had given it its nervous edge.
Your mother, she'd be very happy about it.
How long has Gary lived in your apartment? His foot tapped the brake for no reason.
Oh, I don't know, a while.
Is he a teacher?
He's a travel agent.
Oh. What I was picturing was myself living there with those two thin, safe men, instead of going off to college, doing their housework, playing that jukebox.
Do you mind if I just come right out and say something? I said.
That depends, he said. I didn't recognize his laugh.
What?
What I wanted to say was, if you and Gary are homos, it's fine with me. It doesn't bother me in the least. His hand squeezed the steering wheel. His ear turned pink.
God, what a thing to say to me. Sometimes you just go over the line.
I'm sorry. Boyfriends, not homos. I didn't mean...
Gary's my roommate.
Well, whatever. It's no business of mine, right?
I mean, what an assumption.
I'm sorry. Are you mad at me? Pal?
No, I'm not mad at you, but... Jesus Christ, Dolores!
I waited past two traffic lights worth of silence.
I'm sorry I went to your house, okay? It's just... I don't think I can go to college. I know it would have made her happy, but I'm too scared.
Look at me, he said. Within 1 month, you'll be writing me a letter saying how happy you are. How glad you are you decided to go. How you've met this friend and that friend. I'll bet you any amount of money.
I won't make friends, I said. Everybody hates you if you're fat.
No, they don't. That's an excuse you use.
Don't be hypocritical.
Well, if you ask me, you're the hypocrite. Buddy?
Stop it, he snapped.
Cut it out. I sat on the front step where he dropped me off, composing the letter of apology I'd write. I'd write both him and Gary letters in separate envelopes with separate stamps. Maybe they were just roommates. What did I care? I'd remind him that pals forgave pals, that my mother's death was still messing up my head. I'd meant to tell him about the check I'd gotten from Arthur Music, that photograph of his Watchtower magazine family. But he'd rushed me out of there so fast. He'd tricked me all along with that word of his, pal. Some friendship. His white apartment, that sad singing, already seemed tunneled and distant. One more thing I'd lost. Inside, the stairway wall had turned white and blank, with a network of vein-like cracks. Strips and pieces of the old paper littered the stairway and foyer, rustling like dead leaves under my feet. The radio was off. "Hey," I called. "Mister?" I reached inside the telephone table, took out the corkscrew I'd hidden there, and walked slowly toward the kitchen. If he jumped out at me from somewhere, I'd blind him. He was sitting cross-legged like Buddha in the backyard sun. His eyes were closed. His lips moved slightly. If he was having a drug trip on our time, I'd just rip up Grandma's check and call the cops. Keeping an eye on him, I tiptoed around the kitchen, making myself a salami sandwich, blaming the 3/4-inch wad of meat slices on everything I'd put up with. Mr. Pucci's hypocrisy. The letter from Arthur Music. This freak in the backyard. I was on my second sandwich and a napkin full of Cheetos when he walked inside, bleary-eyed, without bothering to knock. "Oh, hi," he said. He looked at my sandwich, not me. "You got any peanut butter and a couple of more slices of that bread? I've been out there for 15 minutes trying to meditate with my stomach growling." "How come you stopped working?" I snapped. "We're not paying you to meditate." "You're paying me by the job, not the hour," he said, smiling. "The plaster's got to dry before I can size it." I handed over the peanut butter jar. He ate his sandwich in the parlor, flipping the stations on Grandma's TV. Then he came back in the kitchen and asked if he could make another one. He sang while he did it. "By the way, my name's Larry Rosenfarb, in case you're interested." A quarter of his new sandwich disappeared with the first bite. He chewed, smiled, swallowed. His hand disappeared inside the Cheeto bag. "Tell me your name, and I'll stop calling you Yoo-hoo, and excuse me." I paused long enough for it to be uncomfortable for him. "Dolores," I finally said. He stopped chewing.
"Like the mouthwash?"
"Dolores."
"Oh, okay. I thought you said Lavoris," he laughed and whacked the side of his head as if it were a broken TV.
He was irritating weird, not psycho weird. That much I could tell. I could pretty much see I needn't have bothered with the knives. The noontime news was about the Woodstock Festival. Rock music had closed down the interstate. A helicopter view showed people's heads milling and clustering like molecules in a science movie.
"Far fucking out!" Larry shouted.
He flopped into Grandma's parlor chair so hard it sent cushion dust flying. He leaned toward the television as he watched.
"Me and my old lady were thinking of going up there. Only our kid got an ear infection 2 nights ago and we missed our ride. The brakes on my truck are for shit, or else I'd still try it. I could just see me rear-ending half of America, everyone under 30 walking around with one of those neck brace things."
The newscaster said Woodstock had been proclaimed a disaster area, that nothing quite like this had ever happened before.
"And here you and me sit in the living room in Rhode Island," Larry said. "It figures. Fuck a duck."
"You and me," he'd said. "As if we were a twosome." When I'd answered the door that morning, my fat hadn't even shocked him.
"Is your kid a boy or a girl?" I asked.
"A girl. Tia. Tia the Terrible."
"How old is she?"
1 year and 4 months. She just learned how to walk. Got into my 8-tracks the other day and yanked out about 9 yards worth of Disraeli gears. Lucky for her, she's cute, the little shit. Looks just like Ruthie, my wife." I saw his wife as Yoko Ono, floppy hat, hair in her eyes, lying in bed for peace. "I wanted to name her Free. Check it out.
F-R-E-E, exclamation mark. Like the punctuation is part of the name, right? Ruthie didn't like it, though. Said all she could think of was, like, free sample. That's not what I meant, though. I meant, you know, unencumbered. Only after she said it, all I could think of was free sample, too. He went out to the hallway to check the drying. Nope, he said. Then he was back at the television, flipping channels. Mind if we watch Jeopardy? He asked. The show was on the screen before I could answer. He sat on the rug and shouted correct answers to the contestants. His wild hair blocked off a corner of the screen. You're pretty smart, I said during the commercial. And you thought all I could do was hang wallpaper. He laughed. You're just catching me during one of my fallow periods, that's all. One of my compost years. I'm expecting a creative leap pretty soon now. He turned to the TV screen. What's a signet, asshole? He shouted at a floundering contestant. What is a signet? Art Fleming repeated. Can I use your phone? I watched him through the doorway. He paced back and forth, stretching the cord further than I thought it would go. Hi, he said. How's the fleas? Grandma talked secrets into the telephone. Larry shouted. Okay, okay, calm down. Call the vet. We'll get the fucker dipped again, and we'll spray the shit out of the house and camp down at Burlingame. I should be through by noon tomorrow. Then fuck it. We'll just drive up there with our shitty brakes and see what's cooking. When he returned, he said, We've been dog-sitting for this ugly mutt named Chuck for these friends of ours who are going cross-country. So, 2 days ago, our whole apartment starts breaking out with fleas. I'm talking zillions, man. Poppy seed city all over your feet. Ruthie's good and freaked, afraid if we spray, the grandchildren will mutate or something. You should see how ugly this dog is, man. Chuck. Old Chucker the fucker. You could stay here, I said. The three of you. Sleep here overnight. I wanted to see that little girl. Yeah? He said. Nah. I don't mind it. I like it. You sure? I'll cook supper. He shrugged, smiling. We'll all cook supper, he said. Have us a party. When he left at 4 to pick them up, I wondered if he'd come back. An hour went by, an hour and a half. My fat must have occurred to him belatedly, I thought. I started on a bag of crinkle-cut chips. Then they were there in the alley, gabbing and slamming doors. Larry's curls were wet and stringy. He'd changed into bell-bottom jeans and a paisley blouse, the kind Link wore on Mod Squad. A dashiki. You stay here, Fleabag, Larry called into the truck. His wife was short and squat with hoop earrings and brown hair woven into a fat braid. Larry was holding on to soup pot handles with pot holders. His wife was loaded down with bags, packages, the baby on her hip, and a fold-up high chair hooked to her wrist, the legs banging behind her. Have a kid someday and your traveling days will be over, she said to me as she entered. Her voice was low and smooth, the kind of voice you don't question. She dropped her belongings in the middle of Grandma's parlor and began moving knick-knacks and breakables to higher ground. This is so nice of you, she said. I've been snapping fleas and crying all day. I'm normal, I thought. A normal person meeting new friends. By the way, I'm Ruth, she said, shaking my hand. Tia had red-painted toenails and pierced ears. Her diaper was a calendar dish towel. In the kitchen, cabinets opened and pans clattered. Ah, shit, Larry said. What's the matter? Ruth called. I forgot the coriander. In the diaper bag, Ruth said. She had a wide, shiny forehead and a big rear end that stuck out from her granny dress. Tia slapped Ruth's leg and whined. How did you guys meet, anyway? I asked. Larry and me? We were in Vista together, assigned as partners. Something snapped, and suddenly there was Ruth's whole shoulder, her fat breast. I looked away, then back again. Black Root, West Virginia. Ask not what your country can do for you, etc., etc. Ruth's breast, laced with veins, was dripping milk. I could tell it had a heaviness to it from the way she lifted it to Tia, who opened her mouth and latched onto the purple nipple. Ruth pressed her lips together in pain, then relaxed, and smiled, and kissed the top of Tia's head. They always ran the Vista ads on middle-of-the-night television. Blonde all-American types in khaki shorts, yucking it up with grateful Navajos. No one in those ads looked like Ruth or Larry. "Did you like it there?" I asked. "Blackroot? Loved it, for a while. We were organizing a Head Start program for preschoolers. You know, shrink a little of the disadvantage, give them a better shot. The locals thought it was kind of silly, but they were pretty polite. We were a novelty. The women liked Larry. The men liked my boobs. I could get them to do anything for me, except look up." She passed her fingers through Tia's curly hair, hunting for fleas. Her eyes met mine. "Your hair is gorgeous," she said. I tried not to smile. "No, it isn't." "How long were you in West Virginia?"
11 months. Then the bottom fell out.
"Do you guys own a vegetable peeler?" Larry yelled in. "It's in the metal cabinet, middle drawer," I called back to him.
"What do you mean the bottom fell out?"
"First I got pregnant with Tia. Then some of the local kids got drunk and beat up Larry."
"How come?"
"Well, to begin with, he made the mistake of telling someone he was opposed to hunting. Therefore, he was queer."
I pictured Mr. Pucci and Gary sitting together on their white sofa.
"Then they saw how much he liked playing with the 4-year-olds in our program, full out, down on the floor with them, enjoyed himself. So someone got the idea he was probably molesting them. Diddling them, they called it. He almost lost his left eye in that fight. Not to mention his idealism. It was pretty awful. We got married in a hospital in Baltimore. Kazoo music, popsicles. Larry wore an eye patch and yellow pajamas. A male nurse sang Chapel of Love. My parents were horrified."
"Because you were pregnant?"
"Oh, they didn't know I was pregnant yet. They were just freaked about the ceremony. Not exactly something you'd invite the Lennox and Oh Promise Me crowd to, you know." "Tia, hold on a second," Ruth said, changing breasts. "Who do you think I am, Elsie the cow?"
Too much was happening. I wanted to watch him cook. I wanted her to keep talking.
Plus, I had dropped out of law school less than a year before. Mother and Daddy hadn't trusted Vista from the beginning. You should have seen them both the day of the wedding. The I-told-you-so looks were flying around like spears. Poor Mother.
"I'm going to college in 3 weeks," I said.
"Maybe." "Why maybe?"
I shrugged.
"I don't know. I'll probably hate it." "Oh, go anyway. I usually learn more from the situations I hate than the ones I love, you know?"
Larry came in with a bottle of wine and 3 of Grandma's china cups. The wine tasted sour and exciting.
"I tell you," Larry said, "I've spent one day here and I've seen enough flamingos to last me a decade. How did you folks manage to live with that wallpaper so long?"
"Don't blame me. This is my grandmother's house." I took another sip of the wine.
"She's a real bitch."
Saying it made me blush, but no one seemed to notice. Larry was making faces at Tia, coaxing giggles out of her.
"I think I'll take a stroll out to the glove compartment," he said.
Ruth rolled her eyes. "Don't you think you'd better ask first?" He turned to me.
"What do you say, Dolores?
Want to engage in a little pre-dinner reefer madness?
Double your pleasure, double your fun.
What?
Do a number, get high.
I couldn't recall Grandma's face.
Go ahead, I told him. It's fine with me.
Larry rolled the joints in little tissue paper squares, then lit one, taking a series of weird little drags. It popped and glowed, and a spark flew to the rug. The four of us watched it die beneath Ruth's big toe. He took the joint out of his mouth and stared at it so closely that his eyes crossed.
"This stuff is cosmic," he said. "Dolores?"
I shook my head. "Maybe later," I said.
"How about Ruth?"
"Oh, I can't," she said. "The breastfeeding."
"So how come your grandmother's a bitch?"
I took another gulp of wine.
"She just is.
She's had a shitty life." Tia's head flopped back and her whole body went limp against Ruth. I sat there aching for Ma, wondering if she had ever breastfed me.
"Is it just the two of you who live here?" Ruth asked.
"Yep," I said. I reached for the joint, surprising myself. "Maybe I will try this."
"My grandmother's cool," Ruth said.
She smiled down at Tia, tracing a finger against her eyebrow.
83, and she still runs her own farm. Does all the canning. Everything."
I imitated Larry's sipping of the joint, but exhaled the sweet smoke too quickly.
Hold it in," Larry coaxed. "We got us a novice here, Ruthie."
When I got it right, he smiled and pointed a thumb at Ruth.
"Her grandmother's real zen. It's her mother who's the bitch."
Ruth frowned.
"She is not. All those polite little notes at holiday time, all those Neiman Marcus stuffed animals for Tia. But that's okay. I forgive you."
He leaned over and kissed her. They kissed for so long, I stopped looking away. I took another drag, held it in, let it out. "I can be a bitch sometimes," I said softly. But neither of them heard. They were still kissing.
"Are you high?" Larry asked, stirring his soup.
"No," I said.
Then the stove warped. Ruth's shiny forehead struck me as hilarious. "A little, maybe. I'm not sure."
Ruth frowned. "Larry, that isn't the zombie stuff you got from Steve, is it? I don't trust that guy."
"Ruthie, give it a rest," Larry smiled. "It's Woodstock weekend."
He reached up under his dashiki and scratched himself. A fleck of ash floated from his beard into the soup. Ruth shook her head and sighed. Supper was a feast. Honeydew melon, Ruth's molasses bread, funeral meatballs from the freezer, Larry's Creole eggplant stew. I ate slowly, letting the new tastes explode in my mouth. Somewhere in the middle of the meal, Larry got up from the table and did a flamingo imitation so funny I couldn't breathe. This is all really happening, I thought. I dunked another slice of Ruth's sweet bread into my stew.
"Look at that shit-eating grin," Larry said.
I looked around for it, then realized they were both staring at me, smiling in approval.
"Who, me?" I asked, delighted.
Then the radio was on, and we were at the sink doing dishes, Ruth's big rear end swaying to the music as she washed.
"I'm a man, yes I am, and I can't help but love you so."
Larry grabbed two of Grandma's prescription vials and shook them like castanets. He was rolling his hips to the rhythm in a way I couldn't stop watching.
"You know what?" I said.
"Know what?"
"You're sexy."
Then I blushed and covered my face with a dish towel. Ruth closed her eyes when she danced and rocked in a private, sexy way. Then I was dancing. They insisted. Timid at first, I risked nothing more than a few tentative steps, a swinging of arms.
Larry took my wrists, guiding me, and then the music was inside of me, coaxing my body into the dancing. I felt free, a weightless astronaut, Carol Burnett without her fat suit. My long, gorgeous hair rocked from side to side. Larry went out somewhere for ice cream. That dog had gotten into the house, was licking spilled wine off the kitchen floor. I thought of the dog pound dogs the day Jack had raped me, felt his ramming, that truck ramming Ma. "My mother got killed last month," I said. Ruth looked up, waited, confused. "In an accident? There was this truck." She brought me to the couch and we both sat. First I talked, then she did. It was her touch, not her words, that mattered. Her leg against my leg, her hand at the back of my head, drawing me to her. Her other hand cupped my shoulder, squeezing it at the worst of what I told. When Larry got back, he knelt before me, rubbing my cheek while Ruth told him about Ma. "It's all right. It's all right," he kept saying, and his touch, too, comforted me. Those warm, rough-skinned knuckles brushing away my tears, skidding gently against my fat face. Somewhere in the middle of the night, I woke up on the parlor floor, stiff and tingly-headed. "They've left me," I thought. Across the room by the window, there was a sigh. A milky shape moved up and down, folding and unfolding like a flower in a time-lapse movie. In my gathering consciousness, I stared at their marriage, their wholeness. I saw, for a second, my parents, the things Ma and Daddy must have done, the kind of wholeness they must have had. Then lost. Losing that was what had made Ma crazy. I want, Ruth kept saying. Then Larry's breath caught, and they whimpered and clung together, their bodies rocking as one. I lay there, shaking and staring, and wondering how the poison Jack's spite had let go inside of me could be what Larry let go in Ruth. What Ruth wanted. By the time I woke up again, it was bright morning. Larry had put up the first two strips of seashell wallpaper. He was wearing cutoffs and his dashiki, black socks on his chalky legs. He mumbled measurements in his head and moved businesslike along his staging. "Hiya," he said. I looked away. "Where's Ruth?" "She went to the store for orange juice. We wiped out your whole supply this morning. Well, Tia did. She got real curious about what the bottom of the carton looked like." "I don't care about that. You sure are working fast. God." "Yeah, well, I'm kind of hot to finish by this afternoon. We're going to try to make it up there, to the festival." I knew it was hopeless. The possibility of their taking me with them. The back screen door slapped shut. "Good morning," Ruth said. "How are you doing?" "All right," I said. "Do you know you have mint growing in your backyard?" "I do." She held a leafy bouquet to my nose. "You picked that here?" I said. "Uh-huh. I think I'll make a shampoo for Tia, if that's all right with you. You want one, too?" She half-filled their soup pot and brought the water to a boil. Stalk by stalk, she dropped in the mint. The kitchen air turned moist and sharp. With Grandma's paring knife, she shaved curls of soap into the liquid. "This is so great," I said, as Ruth massaged the sweet suds into my scalp. Tia walked over my toes with her tiny bare feet. "How did you learn to make shampoo?" "In the Appalachians. I learned it from the old woman whose house I was staying at, Ida Brock. You should have seen her. Two brown teeth, pot belly, the same checkered dress every single day. But she had these liquid black eyes that you could hone the truth on, and long, wavy white hair. She kept it in a ponytail during the day,
But first thing in the morning, it would be down and flowing, like yours. It was beautiful hair.
How come you left law school? Did you flunk out?
Oh, God, no. I was doing fine academically. Studied my head off. Knew just how to play the game. The faculty loved me, especially my advisor, who I made the mistake of sleeping with. "We have great things in store for you, Ruth," he kept whispering. Never had the nerve to ask who we was. Just kept chalking up those A's because I knew that's what he liked. He and my parents both. Good little obedient Ruthie.
The lather was cool and fragrant. Her fingers massaging my scalp felt wonderful. One afternoon, we were in bed together at his house. His wife was away. And he goes to the closet and pulls out a suitcase. All that was in it was this pornographic joke magazine. These close-up pictures of genitals, male and female, all fixed up to look like faces. Pubic hair, afros, penis, noses, vagina mouths, pages and pages of this stuff. "Look at this one," he kept saying. I mean, this guy publishes in the Yale Law Review, for Christ's sake. So, right there, I just got so tired of the whole thing. Angry, too. He was sitting up in the bed, naked. And I reached over and took hold of his limp little prick. "And look at this tiny little garden slug," I said. "This one's the biggest joke of all." I withdrew the next morning. I mean, it was more than just that one thing, my leaving, but that's the one that sticks in my mind. Him sitting there getting off on pictures of genitals fixed up like Mr. Potato Head. "All men are pigs," I said. Her hands stopped the shampooing. "No, they're not. Larry's not." I thought of their flowering the night before. "Well, anyway, I'm probably not even going to go to college," I said. "It's what my mother wanted, not me." "Oh, go," she said. "Try it, at least. Think of it as an adventure." She rinsed my hair with warm water and toweled it dry, then wrapped it in a turban. "What if I don't like adventure?" I said. Ruth dragged over a kitchen chair and sat down facing me. "Then cultivate a taste for it. Take a chance. That's how you grow." "Look at me," I said. "I'm looking. What?" "My size." "What about your size?" "Growth isn't exactly something I need." She didn't laugh or look away. "If I didn't go into Vista," she said, "I never would have met Larry. Tia wouldn't exist." Tia had the cabinet open and was crawling in with Grandma's pots and pans. Larry's singing carried in to us from the stairwell. Ruth's gaze made me shiver. Then pans clattered to the floor, and she was out of her chair and running to stop the damage. When they were ready to leave, I handed Larry his check. "Here you go," I said. "Have fun at Woodstock. Drive carefully." "Have fun at school," Ruth said. The dog was barking. Everyone was hugging and thanking everyone. From the truck window, Ruth held up Tia's hand and made it blow kisses. Larry honked all the way down Pierce Street. I might have made them up, I thought. Only they'd left evidence. The new wallpaper, a flea on my leg, dried orange juice sticking to my sneaker bottoms when I crossed the kitchen floor. Grandma got home late in the afternoon, hours after I'd gotten back from the bank, where I'd cashed in Arthur Music's check for a thick stack of $20 bills. "The new wallpaper looks pretty," she called out to me. The back door screen made a veil for her face. "What are you doing out there by the ash can?" "Nothing," I told her.
Bees were in the grass, and the afternoon sun warmed my face and arms. I had just found the mint.